What happens after you delete Facebook? Why we need to worry about the European Copyright Directive? We break down Apple's event this week, and I'll give you a first look at the new iPad mini and the new AirPods. All that and more coming up on Tech News Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Tech News Weekly, episode 76, recorded Thursday, March 28th, 2019. This episode of Tech News Weekly is brought to you by Envoy. Envoy builds beautiful modern software to help businesses elevate the physical workplace experience. With Envoy visitors, you can greet guests with a welcoming, sleek iPad sign-in app while still protecting your people, property, and ideas. Start your free trial today at envoy.com/twit.
And by FreshBooks, the ridiculously easy-to-use invoicing and accounting software. If you don't believe us, try it free for 30 days at freshbooks.com/TNW. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to Tech News Weekly. This is the show where every week we talk to people making and breaking the tech news. I'm Megan Maroney.
And I'm Jason Howe. Let's do it.
So many of us have considered deleting our Facebook accounts. Jason has claims to have done it, but he is afraid to check back.
So I'm afraid to log in that it might cancel things.
But one brave soul we know has actually deleted his account and lived to tell about it. Here to discuss his experience is Brian X. Chen, technology columnist from the New York Times. Welcome, Brian.
Hey, guys. Hey, thanks for having me.
So were you a regular Facebook user before you gave it up? And why did you decide to give it up?
So I had been using Facebook since the year after it came out. What year did it come out again? Somewhere in like 2005 or something.
Yeah.
So like I was in college at the time. I was one of the first universities to get access to Facebook. So I was one of the early adopters. And it was just last year where I just felt like, you know, enough is enough, because it was like data scandal after data scandal that just seemed to be coming up every week. And, you know, especially after Cambridge Analytica, I think the last straw for me was when Facebook reported there was like some attack on their network and tens of millions of accounts had been exposed. Like, this is one of many scandals last year, right? So I was just like, okay, I can't really trust this company with my data anymore. I'm just going to hit the delete button. But to answer your question, like, I had been paring down on my Facebook usage overall, like, over the past couple of years, because I just felt that I was getting less and less joy from using the service. I just felt that, you know, like, it was just people who I barely knew or barely know anymore. I barely talked to from college and posting about political news and all these things. And I just didn't really want to participate in it anymore. So I had been thinking about it for a long time, deleting it, that is. Mm.
So you did not give up Instagram, which is owned by Facebook. And tell us what happened. You started to see some odd ads there.
Yeah, what's funny is that so because I deleted Facebook, Instagram no longer had very much information about me, so they started thinking that I was a woman. Because on Instagram, on your account profile, you don't state your gender. I didn't realize this until later. But yeah, so the advertisements I was starting to get were things for like women's bathing suits, slippers, makeup, Sephora ads, for example. And I thought it was kind of funny because I thought like maybe Instagram thinks I'm my fiance because she gets the same ads. And I thought maybe they think we're the same person because we share our dog's Instagram account. But I think it's mostly because they simply just don't know who I am anymore, which is kind of interesting.
Now, you not only deleted Facebook, but you also went one step further. You installed tracker blockers to kind of reduce those targeted ads. So that's probably part of what you're talking about there. It just goes haywire when it can't figure out who the heck you are. They've just got to know. Was there any collateral damage in doing that? Because I know that like that seems like a good next step to do. I've deleted my Facebook account, but I know I'm not living in a fantasy world where I believe that Facebook doesn't have some sort of insight into me. There are trackers all over the place. Did it have any collateral damage that you noticed?
You mean collateral damage in terms of like websites breaking and things like that?
Yeah, exactly. Like you wanted to block the ad tracking, but sometimes when you have like, you know, scripts being canceled in the background, that sort of stuff, it can affect other things that you weren't maybe intending.
Tracker blocking is a bit gentler than ad blocking. Like ad blocking is kind of extreme, where sometimes it even blocks elements that are part of a website, like say like a social media, like Twitter tool or something like right. that. And yet for some reason, the tracker blocker doesn't break as many elements. I have had some cases where like I was shopping and for some reason the shopping cart was not adding items, small things like that. And for sites like that, I would just whitelist the site for the tracker blocker and just add the item and be able to successfully check out. So I know like things like that could be a hassle for people who are kind of average tech users who don't really want to put up with this stuff. But I found the trade-off to be worth it. You know, like I personally don't feel like that I want to get ads that are very relevant to me, because honestly, they just convince me to buy a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. I'm right. with you. So you said you you have the Instagram account that you share mm-hmm. With your partner. That's Cooking with Fat Max at Instagram.
Yeah.
Someday Max will be an influencer, a pet influencer, if it's the last thing I do.
He's famous enough.
Okay, he's famous enough. It's true. That's the way I feel about myself. But so did you, do you not have your own personal Instagram account as well? Because I'm confused about why they're not just getting information from that.
I do have my own personal Instagram account. It's a private one. It's just, you know, for me, but I'm still getting women's ads on that Instagram account as well. So it's a bit strange. And I think a big thing is that because you don't state your gender in your Instagram profile, they just simply don't know I'm a man anymore. I have no idea why they would default to think I am a woman, but I generally don't use that account very much. I mainly use the dog account. And because I share the dog account with my fiance, it could be crossing wires and thinking that my device is also my fiance's device, even on my personal account. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't really know what's going on. But Facebook, when I talked to them, they were like, well, deleting Facebook made it so it was missing a lot of signals that it could have been taking from Facebook, you know. So because of that, it just might be serving me the incorrect ads.
Yeah. Now you point out your Taylor Stitch targeted ad example in your article that led to you actually purchasing a jacket after it seemed to track you everywhere. This is, I'm assuming, before you kind of stopped all of this tracking. Mm-hmm. Looking back on that now, like on one hand, you ended up with a jacket that I'm sure you enjoy having. Do you feel manipulated in any way? Because you had initially said no. And I think this probably happens to a lot of us and we don't even realize it, right? We say no to something, but then it like follows us around and eventually we give in. Yay, we ended up with it. But it's kind of manipulative. It's very manipulative, actually.
Well, I mean, I guess yes and no in that, I mean, honestly, I do still wear the jacket. I like the jacket. You know, I don't regret buying it.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, did I need another jacket? You know, like probably not. And that's probably why I said no in the first place. It's like, oh, yet another gray jacket in my closet. Like, I mean, it looks cool and everything, but I could have done without it, you know. And I think if that ad had not followed me around from site to site and talking to like from Facebook to like the NewYorkTimes.com and all these other sites until like I finally bought this thing and finally the ad stopped showing. You know, it's stuff like that, I think, encourages people to impulse buy or make them reconsider after they've closed out of the shopping cart, things like that. Is that manipulation? Some people would consider it. I just find it to be really nagging and intrusive, and I'm living a simpler life ever since I started blocking the trackers and I deleted Facebook. In the article, I do point out that my spending dropped dramatically after I deleted Facebook and stopped seeing these ads. It was something like 45% that it dropped. So pretty significant amount that I'm saving now.
Very.
So you also talk about how your friends did not, you didn't lose friends. You connect with most of them at the same amount and maybe even more deeply, your small group. But you had one holdout, one friend who only communicates via Facebook Messenger. And you said you did actually communicate less with that person. Why can't you convince that person to get off Facebook Messenger?
Well, you know, I'm not going to tell people what to do. I frankly, I don't understand why people are just tied to one app. You know, maybe it's just too much for people to have several apps, like for messaging. You know, like I personally have like 6 or 7 messaging apps because I have to use private messaging for journalism and all that stuff. But maybe for average people, they're just like, well, I want to use one app. Most of my friends are already on here. Why should I download another one? So, you know, like, I'm not going to tell people they're doing the wrong thing by staying on Facebook. I know that people have their reasons. But yeah, it's a bit disappointing that I lose touch with like that one person. But, you know, still we're friends. And like, if we see each other in real life occasionally, you know, we'll still chat it up and it's still the same relationship we always had. We just don't have as much small talk in between.
Do they know that you're the personal technology columnist for the New York Times? I mean, that's your job to tell people what technology to use.
Yeah, I mean, they know that, but it can get obnoxious, right? Like when some guy's just like telling you what to do all the time. So I try to scale it back.
I guess so. And someone's pointing out in the chat room, which we should point out, that you don't need to have a Facebook account to have a Facebook, to have Facebook Messenger, but that's their way of getting more of your information. I mean, right. they want that so that if you're like, well, I don't use Facebook, but you don't need it for Facebook Messenger.
I think technically you need an account, but you can deactivate the account and still have Messenger. But I think technically you still have an account. So there's still ways for them to track like your personal data and follow you around. So that's
right.
The distinction I would draw. Yeah.
And so you aren't spending all of your evenings, you know, swiping through, reading news feeds, feeling miserable about yourself anymore. Mm-hmm. You actually have time to read books, right? Like that seems like a pretty big net positive.
Yeah, it's nice because like, I think part of it too is that I'm just less distracted, right? Yeah. So like ever since I deleted Facebook, I don't even really know what I was doing on Facebook. You know, I wasn't really posting much myself. I was just kind of, it was like a parallel to the internet. You know, it was like that tab that was always open. I would just look at it every now and then just to see what my friends are saying and then realizing like, oh, a lot of what these people are saying is not that interesting anyway. So like I'm participating less and less and yet it's still distracting me, you know? But yeah, I started reading lots of Murakami books. Like I'm kind of addicted to that right now and some different like American short story collections, things like that. Just trying to, you know, get my creative stimulus going if I want to start writing creatively on my own. And that, you know, these are all good things. But yeah, I would say I don't even know if that's directly correlated or connected with quitting Facebook. It's just something that happened afterward. And maybe it could have happened without deleting Facebook. But I think there's a good chance that it had something to do with being off the social network.
It is. I'd like to meet someone that has read all of Murakami and also spends a lot of time on Facebook because
it doesn't exist.
Well, because I used to be able to. Now I don't know if I could. Like, I don't know if I could read one of his books. Maybe I'll put that on my to-do list. Which one would you recommend?
Definitely The Elephant Vanishes. The collection of short stories is a really good one.
Okay, short stories I can handle. I have one last question. I'm asking this as someone else who tries to turn her dog into a pet fluencer. Do you ever think if dogs could talk that they might also ask to get off Facebook and Instagram?
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, I mean, definitely there are times when, like, you know, I'm on the couch or, like, in bed with my partner and, like, we're scrolling through our phones. Like, first we're playing with the dog and then we get distracted and we pick up our phones and we're doing something, like, going on Twitter or Instagram or whatever. And then the dog jumps off the bed or the couch and looks kind of mopey, you know, like, oh, you're not paying attention to me anymore. So they can definitely tell, right, when you're distracted by a screen. And I feel a little bit bad about that. And I'm a bit more conscious of it now that I've deleted Facebook, another good thing.
Yeah. Brian X. Chen is the lead consumer technology writer at the New York Times, where he reviews products and writes for the column Tech Fix, dedicated to solving tech-related problems. Thanks so much for joining us, Brian.
Thank you, Brian.
Good to be here again. Thanks, guys.
Take care.
Pleasure talking with you.
Bye.
Up next, we're going to talk a little bit about the EU's copyright directive that has people very worried about the open web. But first, this episode of Tech News Weekly is brought to you by Envoy. It's time to welcome guests to the modern lobby and be ready for everything that comes through and everyone that comes through your front door. Envoy Visitors is an iPad kiosk. We actually have one at the front of the Twit studio here that makes workplaces more efficient. So how does Envoy Visitors work? Well, when visitors arrive, they're going to sign in on the iPad kiosk. They enter their details, sign any legal documents that you might require, like NDAs. That's all done right on the iPad. Envoy then notifies their host to let them know that they're here. Envoy will automatically alert your employee when a guest arrives. That's going to save you time and hassle and save them kind of waiting endlessly, wondering when you're going to walk through the door to greet them. Your employee knows who's coming and when, making awkward meetings a thing of the past. And there are just a number of benefits of using Envoy Visitors for your business. You can boost your office efficiency with smart security that does not intimidate. Everybody knows how to use an iPad, and it's just very, very straightforward to sign in. There's no more paper log book. that doesn't provide any real value. It just kind of sits there, closed or open, whatever. Sign in unlimited visitors, print customized badges, send alerts when VIPs arrive. It even notifies administrators about unattended guests. And you can integrate with your existing security systems like Wi-Fi access, ID checks, and emergency notifications. That's going to give you even more enhanced security. And finally, you'll have data on the visitors in your office so you know who's coming, when they're on site, who they're meeting with, and why. And you can keep that log. It makes it really easy to check in and know exactly what's happening. Envoy Visitors works with the tools you already use, such as Slack, G Suite, Box, and Salesforce, and Salesforce Chatter, to name a few. They're designed to help companies of all types, including those in highly regulated industries, so you can meet security and compliance requirements. Join companies like Nike, Pinterest, and Spotify that have worked with Envoy to welcome over 30 million visitors to their businesses. Protect your business, your people, your property, and your ideas the welcoming way with Envoy. See why 10,000 workplaces worldwide choose Envoy to make a great first impression. Go to envoy.com/twit and start your free trial today. That's envoy.com/twit. The open web is changing. In large part, the web has been more or less accessible in its entirety to, well, anyone with an internet connection, with some caveats. There are, of course, outliers like countries that limit citizens to filtered content. Think North Korea is one example. Well, the EU's copyright directive has now been signed off on, and though it's a law for Europe, its ripple effects are trickling down to all of us. Joining us to talk about the ideas that make up the directive and what's going on there, how it's changing the potentially the freedom of information that we're so accustomed to online, is Corin McSherry, who is the legal director at the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It's great to have you here. Thank you for taking time to join us. So why don't we begin by talking about the directive, more specifically the ways in which Articles 11 and 13 seem to have gone sideways.
Right. So there's been a copyright reform in the works for many, many years now, and most of the directive is fine. Most of the directive is fine, reflects reasonable changes. But at the last minute, about a year ago, they slipped in Articles 11 and 13, and that changed everything. Article 11 is referred to as the link tax, and it basically requires folks to get a license if they want to share a link to a news article, which who's going to do that, right? Most of us don't do that. It's not how it works. And then even worse was Article 13. And Article 13 is basically a filtering directive. And it requires any platforms above a certain size and above a certain age, so if they've been around for 3 years or more, and you get a certain number of visitors, you have to take responsibility for making sure that no copyrighted content is ever uploaded on any of your platforms without permission. That's going to require massive filtering. There's no other way to do it.
Yeah, and huge, huge changes to the way that these major companies are working. They've operated so differently. How wide is this net potentially, and when are we going to see this in effect? Like, when does this kind of go into place?
Well, so there's one more technical hurdle that they have to pass. It has to go through the European Council. But normally, once you get to the European Council, everyone just agrees. But nonetheless, a couple countries could decide to change their minds, which would be great. And given that there's hundreds of thousands of people taking to the streets in Germany, you know, we may see at least Germany change its mind. But if it gets to the European Council, then we move to the implementation stage. And what that basically means is all of the different countries have to figure out how they're going to implement this thing. And so that's where the battle's going to turn, where a lot of folks who are very concerned about this are going to have to go country by country and try to make sure that the implementation is as least damaging as possible.
So will it be different per country? Like, can Germany implement it differently than, say, France will?
Yes. But the problem is, for a company, if you operate all over Europe, if a given country passes particularly strict mechanisms, you're going to probably want to just comply with that across the board, as opposed to complying with the lowest, the simplest and least rigorous mechanism. So that's going to mean you're going to lean towards maximum filtering, if that's what a country like France most likely requires, because it's too too hard to make sure that you implement, you know, different approaches across all of the different countries. It's pretty challenging to do that. And remember, if you don't do it right, you're facing a world of legal hurt.
And then for users, let's say users in the U.S., obviously the show that we do here is based in the U.S., is anyone here running the risk of seeing or noticing any changes to the content that they're used to seeing because of these changes in the EU? Like, you know, I mean, obviously these companies are going to have to make decisions around that. Like, do we just, you know, conform everything to the same standard, or do we share differently? But like you're saying, that's a huge technology hurdle for them to tackle, right?
Right. And we're for sure going to see a lot of pressure to just have one big set of filters to rule them all. And that's going to affect us in the United States as well, because it's technically can be very challenging and expensive for a company to adopt different mechanisms for different countries. Now, companies can do that, but it gets expensive. But the other thing that we fear is going to happen is that, which has happened before, is that certain groups are going to come to the United States and say, okay, well, Europe passed this law. Why don't we do the same thing here in the United States? And then we can harmonize around the world legally as well as practically. So that's something that we would really not like to see. We think it's bad enough in Europe. We certainly don't want to import this bad idea to the United States as well.
So we don't want to, like, Chicken Little, the sky is falling this, but want to take it as seriously as we need to. And I think the EFF does a really good job of that. The Verge compared this to when we required passports, when Europe started requiring passports to travel between countries, or when everyone started requiring that. It didn't happen until after World War One. Before that, we could just travel. Would you say that that's an accurate metaphor for what's going on here?
Well, I mean, I think we're looking at potentially a pretty fundamental change. YouTube, for example, has had what it calls a content ID filtering mechanism in place for about a decade now. And the sky hasn't fallen. But what has happened is we have 10 years of lots and lots of lawful content being taken down and identified as infringing when it wasn't. So based on that, what we know is that's what's going to continue to happen, and just going to happen on a broader scale as more and more companies feel like they have to implement the same kinds of systems. And which is why a lot of people raised this question and protested against Article 13 in particular in Europe, because they knew that this was going to have a profound impact on online speech. The thing that happens, unfortunately, way too often is, in the name of stopping copyright infringement, we take down all kinds of non-infringing activity as well. And it's interesting to me, because one of the things that happened, the problem is they pushed it through so quickly, but a number of creators realized the potential problems of this for them, for small creators getting their content up. And they realized this wasn't going to be good for them either. And so they came out against it, but it was too late.
I mean, we're seeing that here at our network. I mean, we've been covering Apple since for 14 years, and covering it with video for almost as long. And just recently, our content has been taken down because we've shown, you know, a 1 or 2 minute clip of an Apple event while we're talking about it, and it's been taken down, and that hasn't happened. Do you think that they're enforcing these content ID? I mean, they're just algorithms. I'm sure it's not a person sitting there, like, deciding to take it down. But do you think they're using them more strongly?
Yeah, I mean, that's precisely the point. It's they have to rely on automated filters. It's the only way to do it cost efficiently, right? Especially if you're under pressure with the threat of a copyright infringement lawsuit, if you're not perfect in taking everything down. So you try to set up filters, and filters aren't very good at figuring out things like fair use, like when you're including a clip and commenting on it. That's a fair use. It's legal under U.S. law, but it's really hard for the robots to figure out that that's actually what's happening, as opposed to something that's infringing.
You obviously specialize in IP and intellectual property, open access, free speech online. Was there a reality? Like, did you take this seriously ahead of time? Did you see this coming? What were your thoughts when you saw that this had passed, these two articles?
Well, so we saw this coming. We've been part of the fight against it over the past year. But as I was mentioning, one of the things that happened is these two terrible articles got slipped in kind of the last minute. This thing's been negotiated for years, And it was only just about a year ago that we saw Article 13 and 11 get slipped in. And then we all geared into action. It took many people by surprise. And there were many points at which we thought we would be able to stop it because so many people were coming out against it, like Tim Berners-Lee and lots of creator groups and all kinds of activists, so many people coming out against it. We were pretty hopeful that we could stop this thing. But it just turns out that that we weren't able to do it. And, you know, it's pretty discouraging. But we're not done. We're not giving up the fight. We're going to fight it everywhere we can. We're going to work on the implementation. And if they try to import it here to the United States, we're going to stop that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what do you make of the news? There was news a couple of days ago that the vote order apparently had been swapped, which led to a number of parliament members placing their votes in the wrong order, which meant they voted incorrectly, or so they're saying. This, of course, they realized and discovered after the fact. How could that have changed the vote? I guess I don't know how that actually happens, but is there any way that this could lead to some sort of reversal, or is it just kind of too late as far as that's concerned?
Well, yeah, I have to say, when I got that report, I just found it that I was shocked. That was one thing I don't think anyone saw coming, was that something this momentous could happen because of a mistake. That's crazy. It really, really is. And so I know that some of the members of parliament are trying to raise the issue and would like to have a revote. Given that mistake, but there's a lot of resistance. And I think institutionally, that's just not how it works in the European Parliament.
Right.
But it may feed into the decisions that happen at the European Council, which again is the final hurdle. So maybe we'll have another shot at this.
Really appreciate you taking time to talk with us, Corinne McSherry from the Electronic Frontier Foundation. That's EFF.org. Thank you so much and have a wonderful afternoon. Sure. We appreciate it.
Thanks.
Take care, Corinne.
Apple is a bank now. We'll talk about what that means with journalist, podcaster, and sci-fi author Dan Morin after the break. But first, this episode of Tech News Weekly is brought to you by FreshBooks, the all-in-one cloud accounting solution helping small business owners succeed. Spend less time on accounting and more time doing the work you love. If you're doing your own accounting, I'm guessing it is the work that you love that you're doing it. So imagine a world in where you're not only saving heaps of time each month, but when clients compliment you on the professionalism of your invoices. FreshBooks self-employed accounting software is great. They can automate recurring invoices. They will log every hour with time tracking. It's easy to understand their reports. You can capture expenses, properly categorize expenses to make filing your taxes a breeze. And right now, if you're still doing your taxes, you understand that anything that can help, you need it. You need it now more than ever. Run your business from anywhere with the FreshBooks mobile app. You can also capture your expenses and send invoices. So let's say you're taking a vacation to Hawaii and you forgot to send that invoices. No problem. You've got the mobile app and you can send it from your vacation, from your chair, from your having your toes in the water and the sand. Know the moment you get paid, all from the palm of your hand. Also nice to know if you're in Hawaii, if you're getting paid so you can afford your trip. It is that easy. Connect with industry-leading apps to level up your accounting. FreshBooks also integrates with lots of apps that you already use, and they will recommend some new ones that you'll be happy that you found. They all make running your business a breeze. So I'm talking about apps like Gusto and G Suite and Funbox and Stripe, Bench, etc. Always improving and creating new features. Select multiple clients on the item sales, invoice details, and payments collected. Add taxes to expenses in bulk. So much more. Keep track of your item sales reports. I mean, it's endless. I could keep going, but we've got a show to do. So don't wait another day. Boost productivity with your team and try FreshBooks now. Visit FreshBooks.com/TNW and make sure that you enter Tech News Weekly in the How Did You Hear About Us section. You can mention also that I reminded you you could do this from Hawaii because they might want to know that too. And if you add Tech News Weekly in the How Did You Hear About Us section, you can receive 30 days free. That's FreshBooks.com/TNW and enter Tech News Weekly to receive 30 days free. And we thank FreshBooks for their support of the show.
So did you hear, Megan? Apple had an announcement this Monday and it was filled with new products. Okay, well, not actually. Apple already trickled out their hardware revisions the week before in a rather subdued press release approach. This event was all about creativity, and it had star power to boot. So we brought in our own star power, the one and only Dan Morin from Clockwise, The Rebound, The Incomparable, Too Many Podcasts to List, also an author, and we'll talk about that in a bit. But welcome to the show, Dan.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
It's great to have you here. This was not a short event. It was nearly 2 hours long. How did the presentation, like we're used to Apple's presentations, really grabbing you? Did it? Is Apple grasping for its onstage mojo at this point? What do you think?
It was a different sort of presentation. And Tim Cook certainly said that up front, kind of as a hint to people, I think, that they shouldn't expect the traditional type of stuff that Apple tends to roll out at these types of events.
Yeah.
And so we got, you know, the A-list celebrities instead of, you know, endless demos and lots of time spent with engineers and developers. I think it was a struggle for them a little bit. It's not something that they're used to doing. And they spent a lot of time talking about TV shows without actually showing anything of the TV shows, which got a lot of people confused and probably a little frustrated. And there were some staging issues, too. Like you said, it was a 2 hour event and like solid half an hour, 40 minutes of that was like lights go down, lights come up. There's celebrities on the stage. Lights go down again. Lights come up. There's different celebrities on the stage. So, yeah, it was a little strange for an Apple event. And I'm not quite sure it worked for them, but it really depends who their audience was.
Yeah. And there remains to be seen going forward, all the stuff that they announced, you know, how successful this stuff is. So let's talk a little bit about that. I remember when the Apple TV was referred to as Apple's hobby. Yeah. Now they have Apple TV Plus. The service, it's fueled by a $1 billion per year budget for exclusive content. What did you think of some of the content that's on offer? Do you think Apple can enter this space and compete effectively? I mean, it seems like some of the other players like Netflix and even Amazon are a little bit further ahead, but Apple is Apple. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, Apple is new to sort of this producing its own content game. They have created a couple shows here and there, but not things of this caliber. And I think what Apple was demonstrating with this is they have the money. They can get A-list name talent like J.J. Abrams, like Steven Spielberg, like Oprah. And they can basically say, hey, we have the ability to bring these people in and create brand new original content that you have never seen before with some of the most famous and interesting people in the industry. And to me, that's their take on it. We're about creativity. We're about enabling storytellers. And it's a different take from what you see in a lot of the other vendors who are emphasizing either their very broad amounts of content, right? Like Netflix has hundreds, if not 1,000 different shows, both of their own and other, you know, library catalog. Disney has its huge IP backlog of, you know, Star Wars and Marvel and their own animation stuff. I think Apple's trying to put its own spin on it and trying to say, like, look, we've got the money. We're not scared of spending it. We'll put $1 billion down easy and we'll see what we can kind of make with that. And we can bring the talent to back it up and play in the big leagues. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of money, we don't know how much this service is going to cost. We know how much news is. That's $9.99. But the other things they announced, the Apple Arcade and I guess that was it. We don't know how much those services are going to cost. Why do you think they didn't tell us? I mean, my guess is that if you added it all up, it would be, you know, it would be $70 a month, not counting
for everything.
Your monthly payment on your iPhone and your iPad your cloud storage. Why do you think they didn't give us the price?
I think that's a big part of it is, and it's an optics thing too, right? Like if they said, we've got this new news service, it's $10 a month, and we've got a game service, and it's $10 a month, and we've got this TV service, and it's $10 a month. By the end of that, you start feeling like, wait a second, am I going to really pay $30, $40 a month extra? And so I think some of it is that, and some of it is since news was ready to go, they were, you know, we've got a price for that, we know how much that costs. Arcade and the TV stuff is a little further off. I think that maybe news kind of works as a test balloon. They get to see how that does, whether people are willing to shell out for it. And then they can sort of base on that, like, well, what kind of money can we, where can we price our other offerings that it's not going to feel like we're just nickel and diming people for all these various services. So I'm sure there's some stuff to get worked out, especially in the game and TV stuff where there's a lot more complications in terms of contracts and paying talent and all that stuff. I think they're probably trying to explore where is the right price point for those services.
It seemed to me that Apple, you know, and late breaking news leading up to the event that Apple was working really hard right down to the wire to get publishers kind of in place in time for the Apple News Plus announcement. And, you know, obviously 300 magazines, I think, is the size of the catalog, which is pretty impressive for a flat rate, $9.99 per month. Do people care about magazines? Is this something people are willing to pay for?
Magazines are tough. I think that's a reason so many of them were willing to take that supposed 50-50 split, is because they've had a hard time converting to digital payment, essentially. Absolutely. Some of the newspapers, you know, the Washington Post, the Times, Wall Street Journal, which is sort of part of this deal, but not entirely, they've had better luck converting subscribers into paying customers. Magazines, I think, have struggled. And there are some in here that I think do better than others. The New Yorker is a big draw for a lot of people. And I think if you add like one more subscription, essentially, then your $10 a month fee is still cheaper than buying, you know, the entire The New Yorker every week, Entertainment Weekly, all that stuff. Like, if you read one or two titles, it seems like you could probably make your money back at that point. Mm-hmm. But it's it remains to be seen just how interested people are in it, and it remains to be seen how effective is it in terms of the experience of using it, whether it's going to be better than they showed off some very fancy stuff. But what I've heard is a lot of the stuff that's in there, especially older issues, is essentially just like reading a PDF, which is, you know, a little less entertaining on your iPad.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, I can't wait to get rid of that pile of New Yorker guilt I have that comes. It just comes too fast, and I can't do it. And but they don't make it easy for you to unsubscribe to that either.
They really don't.
But I do hope that, I mean, if you've ever talked to someone who made their living as a long-form magazine journalist, like, in the heyday, like, it was just so wonderful. Like, they could, you know, I'm talking about people like Susan Orlean and stuff. They would send you to places, and you could really delve into these long stories, and they just few and fewer outlets for that. So I really do hope that this trickles down to those magazines and then to the journalists. I mean, do we have any idea how they're going to pay journalists, how much even the magazine gets?
Yeah, it's unclear. The number that's been bandied about in a lot of cases is 50-50, but it's always more complex than that. There's behind-the-scenes stuff. There's deals in terms of where subscriber data is going. Apple is traditionally likes to keep a close watch on subscriber data because privacy is obviously a big differentiator for it. Whether this encourages publications to go out and invest more in journalism, I'm kind of skeptical, just because so much about it, and I used to work in the magazine industry, so much about it is cutting costs, and people, I feel like, are expensive, and it's not something that a lot of publications are willing to invest in, sadly.
Speaking of investing in something, Apple's credit card, which I'm sure you're going to be getting, Megan, right?
I don't know. We talked about this on Clockwise yesterday. I highly recommend subscribe to Clockwise. It's great episodes, even when I'm not on it. I need to correct myself. I know it's not a bank. I was just joking. But we should. What is it? I don't even know what it is. I mean, it's a credit card, I know. But.
Yeah, but that's a good question. What do you think, Dan, as far as the credit card offering? Tim Cook says it's the biggest change to credit cards in 50 years, which is a bold statement. But, you know, daily cashback feature, there's some interesting facets to this. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, Tim Cook, obviously, given sometimes to hyperbole, as many CEOs are. I don't think it's necessarily the biggest revolution, but I think there's a lot of stuff to like here. And I'm very interested to see where it pushes the rest of the credit card market. Because if people, you know, if consumers have choices and say like, oh, well, you know, I really like my iPhone, I really like Apple, I spend a lot of money at the iTunes store or on the various different Apple services, I can get some cash back for that. There might be an appeal there, and there's a brand name recognition that comes along with it of trust and privacy and all of that. And people who are very sick of the credit card industry might find themselves tempted by it. As far as the offering itself, I don't think there's really anything new here. You compare things like the interest rates and the cashback, and it's fairly middling as an offering goes. But it does have the attention of Apple's detail to design and stuff like that. So, for example, using the machine learning to try and narrow down, tell you where your purchases were made, instead of having those cryptic lines on your credit card statement, a lot of people will appreciate that. Mm-hmm. A lot of people will appreciate the clarity. And since Apple doesn't need to make money on it, they may find the ability to be a little more liberal and a little more flexible with the kind of things that credit card companies are traditionally not. Hence the like less of a reliance on fees and things like that. They don't need that. It's all gravy for them. So I think it opens them up freedom-wise to play around with it and do a lot of stuff that traditional credit card companies are definitely not going to do.
And so what about the Apple Arcade? I know Apple's collected all of these great developers, and they are going to charge some amount of money for a subscription service. But then these games are exclusive, which is that's the thing that is hard to swallow. Like, are they like owning these developers? Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, so the background, it's kind of unclear. A lot of what we're hearing is that they're investing in the development of the games, which seems like kind of almost a publisher role, but a lot of the people they're working with are publishers, so it's unclear exactly how that goes. Obviously, the exclusive is a big deal for Apple because it means that if you want these games, and they're counting on those being sort of marquee games, then you can't get them anywhere else, or at least not in this form or not on mobile. There's some loopholes in terms of what exactly that means. I think Apple has long struggled with its role in gaming. Obviously, on the Mac side, it was never a powerhouse. And we had like the famous Macworld Expo where Steve Jobs came and rolled out this amazing new life-changing game for that would be coming out on the Mac called Halo. And that really didn't pay off for them in the long run because Microsoft bought Bungie like right after that. So I think they've had a success on iOS, but I'm not sure it's something that they ever really felt like they were in control of. It seemed like something that happened and they were kind of riding the wave. And so they're trying to be proactive about this. They're trying to say, hey, let's work with developers because we do have these titles that appeal to people. But it's unclear to me just whether or not that whole subscription service will provide a really good income stream for developers. Like, that's the big question here, is developers get squeezed out because of, you know, sort of getting lumped in with all these other great titles, or does a rising tide lift all boats?
So Apple's great and all, but that's not the real reason why we invited you on here.
Sure,
we invited you on here because you're a celebrity.
Because you're in billions of pockets.
Because you're an author. You actually just released a new book, The Bayern Agenda. Although he'll never say it on the show, Jammer B, John Slinina here, is a ginormous fan of your book. Anyway, so tell us a little bit about it.
It is a sci-fi spy thriller set on this world that is essentially one giant corporation, kind of a bank. So I love Cold War spy thrillers. You go back and you read John le Carré, like Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, or anything of that sort of variety. I really enjoy the interplay there, and I decided I wanted to set a story like that in space. So it's a galactic Cold War with these two superpowers trying to battle it out. And in the middle, we have this small team of covert operatives who are trying to essentially prevent that Cold War from turning into a shooting war. So it's got some thrills, it's got some chases, it's got some political intrigue and spy jinx, as I like to say. And hopefully it all rolls up in an entertaining package. And you can buy it as an ebook, or I've got my Dead Tree copy like on my desk here. It's available in fine bookstores everywhere.
Right on.
I was just reading that like Cold War and like, you know, nuclear war, that kind of, all that stuff is from the past, is coming back in science fiction because of the time we're living in. So
it's coming back in reality too.
Yeah, so. Right. Yeah. So
timely.
It's good.
I'm really riding that wave.
It's a good escape.
It's a good wave to ride.
Or is it a little depressing?
To be completely honest. But anyway, you're in a good position if you're following that way. Dan Warren, it's a pleasure talking with you. We're so thrilled to get you on today. Where do you want people to go to? Is there a place online where they can find your book?
Yeah, in fact, it's everywhere. It's on Amazon. If you go to my site, dmoren.com, you can find links there to Amazon, the iBook store. And it is in physical bookstores. You go into a Barnes & Noble or something, they should have it. Or you can ask them to order it if you want to support your local bookstore, which I always advocate.
Is there an audiobook version?
There is an audiobook version. Okay. It's on Audible, produced by Audible itself.
Right on. Well, congratulations. It's been a lot of fun talking with you, Dan. We will talk to you very soon.
Take care.
Best of luck.
And here is a quick look at a few of the new products that actually have come out. They arrived. I'm going to take them on a little vacation next week, so I'll have more to say after using them. I just got them both yesterday. But first, I got the iPad mini. Which I will show off. I've already opened it. No fancy unboxing.
No cellophane to strip off of the box.
So I never had an iPad mini. Did you have an iPad mini? You did, didn't you?
I actually do have an iPad mini. Okay. It was Lisa's iPad mini for the longest time. And then I asked to have an iPad. So it's the iPad that I have. I don't use it very often. Maybe a little bit of music production here and there. But.
So I've never had one. And I love the size. Like, it really is the perfect size. Everyone said that. But I I agree with them. So I have some notes here. Let's take a look. So it doesn't work with my new pencil. I have this Apple Pencil. Ain't going to work with that. And that's partly because this one charges on the iPad Pro and the other one, the old Apple Pencil, charges in the Lightning, elegantly charges sticking out the end.
Of course.
The butt of the iPad, as Steve Jobs rolls around.
But you can get the new pencil and that will work here. They just work different. The two pencils work differently.
This is the new pencil and it doesn't work on the old Apple Pencil works with the new iPad Mini. Does it make sense? Because I do not think it makes sense.
No, I mean, your explanation makes sense. The rationale does not.
And I had the old pencil, and then I gave it back to Lisa, and I think she sold it and with the old iPad. And so I no longer have it, so I just ordered another one. I ordered it refurbished. Only $85 for a pencil.
I've never ordered a pencil refurbished before. I didn't know you could do that. But Apple's a different company. So
have you ever paid $85 for a pencil?
No. Well, let me think. I did get the pencil or the pen or whatever they call it for the Chromebook Pixel.
And was it $100?
Yeah, it was about that.
Yeah. I mean,
More than just a pencil.
Right. I mean, the reason why I ordered another one is because I think this is a great device for taking notes and for, you know, just writing and, you know, checking things off a to-do list, that sort of thing. So that's why I ordered it. And right after I ordered it, I realized that the Logitech Crayon, which is only $70, I think, and that was the device that came out last year, that works with both iPads. If you got the new iPad and you don't have the old, if you have a new iPad Pro and you got a new iPad Mini and you want to get one pencil, get the Logitech Crayon.
Why would someone have the larger and the smaller iPad? One person have an iPad of different sizes?
Well, because maybe this is the device they use for work and this is the device they use for reading books. It's great for books. So here's John's book that I want to look at a sample of it. Dan's book, sorry. The book that John's reading. Dan's book. Sorry, Dan.
Right.
And, you know, it just looks really great for reading. I mean, it's so much easier to hold.
Yeah.
Like, that is what I really like.
Yeah, that size is definitely really palmable. Like, you can hold it with a single hand. Sometimes the 10-inch tablets, you feel like you need both hands in order to really work with it.
And I'm not saying that Apple invented this, because this is the size of a Kindle, right?
So yeah. You know,
if you want to read, and really, you know, if you don't want a Kindle, it's really nice. Good for like watching movies. Let me show you what it has.
It has a headphone jack.
Have you seen those in this lately?
I have. the Galaxy S10 that I'm reviewing.
Yeah,
I have a regular headphone jack.
Seen them lately. So it has 10 hours of battery life. I mean, I wish everything was USB-C, so I'm kind of bummed that this is Lightning. But, I mean, I certainly have lots of things that are still Lightning. So I am, you know, including my iPhone. So I'm okay with that.
That gives Apple something to update on it the next time it updates.
Right. Exactly. Yes. And you know, it did go backwards. Also, it has a home button. So that is something. And I did not miss the home button, actually. Having it back was not that great. So the form of this iPad is exactly like the last iPad Mini that was last updated in 2015, the iPad Mini 4. So the insides are what's different. So it has the A12 Bionic chip and with Apple's neural engine, so it's faster. Mm-hmm. So I could read this book really fast if I wanted to. Done.
Oh, wow. That's a talent.
It has a 7-megapixel front camera. It has a rear camera, too. I guess it has a rear camera, or selfie camera. The front-facing camera is 7 megapixels. And, I'm going to use it this week.
Cool.
I don't have a case for it yet, which is a little bit disturbing. But
be careful.
I know.
Don't give it to me. I will surely drop it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure I have some case that will be, you know, not a form-fitting case, but some like little sleeve that it can go in.
Mm-hmm. I like it.
Yeah. I mean, it's nothing revolutionary, but I do like the size.
And it's nice that Apple finally came around and updated it, because I think that's a size that people, by and large, do like and do want a newer version of if the last version was 2015. That's quite that a lot has changed in Apple's products.
Right. And everybody
technology wise.
Yeah, everybody thought it was dead. Like that I said they're not gonna make another mini. Get over it, people. Do your crosswords on your phone or your iPad and move on. But they did. They said people kept buying them. So,
right. Yeah, exactly. They had reason to.
So that's the iPad mini, a fuller review coming. And then here are my old AirPods and here are my new AirPods.
Wow, your new AirPods look more like a box.
Yeah, they do look more like
comparison.
A box. Okay, so let's magically unbox these AirPods. They don't really call them AirPods 2. They're AirPods second generation. And you will see that they look a whole lot like the first generation. In fact, you could confuse them. The only difference is this little charging light right here. And so this, I will show you the magic. I have a little charger here. So wireless charging. You can't really see. Maybe if we turn the lights down, you can see the little red light that says it's charging. There it is. So yeah, it's, and like any kind of wireless charging, you kind of have to get it right in the right place. Not so much, but yeah, you can't just throw it down there. You have to make sure it's right there. So
and the light flicks on. I could actually charge the AirPod case with the Galaxy S10.
Oh, you can charge the AirPod case.
Yes.
With the Galaxy S10.
Well, I should preface this by saying I should be able to.
That's a charger?
Yeah, that's one of the features. So wireless
what
power share.
What the heck?
So,
hold on.
Okay.
Let's see here. We'll put it down. Put it in the center. And you might need to move it. Yeah, there you go.
What the?
Isn't that weird?
My gosh.
There you go. Not everything about Android is bad, Megan.
Can you even use AirPods with an Android device?
Well, that's a different question. But but if you're ever out and about and you're about to run out of battery and I've got the S10 on me and you're like, I really need battery, I got your back.
So your phone is a Qi charger.
It can be with wireless power share, which is a feature of the Galaxy S10.
Oh, my goodness.
Sorry, I didn't mean to Samsung your Apple. But
you did. You totally did. I just flabbergasted. So let me tell you about all the innovations in these AirPods. That's it.
That's it. The case.
They're exactly the same. I'm actually afraid to take them both out because I'm afraid I'm going to mix them up. But the one way I could tell is that there's 2 years worth of earwax embedded in the old ones. So, but they are really the same, and you don't have to get the wireless charging case. You can, if you just want to get a new pair of AirPods, you can get them without the wireless charging case. They're only $160 without the charging case, and they're $199, so $200 with the wireless charging case. And they also come with a lightning cable, and you can also charge them through lightning.
Nice.
Or is that USB-C?
Looks like USB-C to me, but
It came with a lightning cable, so. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
No, that's lightning.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's lightning.
That's lightning.
Yeah, so sorry about that. Yeah, it's definitely lightning. They promise longer talk time, so I haven't actually gotten to try that out. I mean, the best thing about these is how easy they are to set up. So if you have, like if you spend a lot of time pairing Bluetooth devices, you know that can be exasperating, and literally you hold these close to your device and the little animation comes up and they pair and it's amazing.
There's also some improvements around Siri integration, right? You don't have to tap them anymore. You just say, hey, S, and Siri appears.
You can say, hey, Siri, because she never listens anyway. See, I have an iPad, iPhone, and these, and nothing heard me.
Wow. Okay.
So the thing about that is I've been wondering why everyone was so excited about that, right? Because usually when you have your AirPods, you're not that far away from your phone. I mean, you can go pretty far away from your phone with these, much further than any other Bluetooth devices, Bluetooth earphones. You can go further. So I get it. I went downstairs with them on and said, hey, Siri, and she heard me. It heard me and made a phone call for me.
Okay.
So that is, but I mean, most, it's not like, it's not like Qi charging inside a phone.
Well, I mean, yeah, let me know if you want to borrow my S10 someday.
Yeah.
You can like, take it for a spin.
Yeah, I mean, you can. That is pretty amazing. I'm still a little excited about that. The other thing is they didn't change the shape, so I'm not even convinced I'm going to keep these because they still sort of fall out of my ear.
Oh, yep, they fell.
Yeah, so...
I'm still just kind of amazed that, they look the way that they do.
They what?
I'm still just kind of amazed that they look the way that they do. I've always thought that the AirPods just look a little funky.
Like they look like something long thing is coming out of your
ear. Yeah, and like I keep expecting, you know, they've been around for a couple of years now. I keep expecting for my eyes to get used to it over time because a lot of times, like when the Nintendo Wii was announced, mm-hmm. it took me a very long time to get used to that name, but eventually I got used to that name. But my eyes just still aren't used to the look of the AirPods in the ears.
Yeah.
Maybe if I wore them.
Yeah, grow your hair like this and then they're just hidden.
Well, that's true.
That is sort of the one of the reasons I don't use them as much. It's already falling out. I can feel it falling out of my ear. When I've used them in the office, like the big cans are the sign of don't bother me, I'm working. Mm-hmm. But if I'm just listening to music like this, you'd have no idea.
No one knows. That explains the many times I've been like, hey Megan, she's ignoring me.
Right. It's true. Yeah. So actually they're not falling out, so it's not so bad. They will. Right, it's true. And when I tried to run with them, for sure. But you know, if you had the original AirPods and you want to upgrade, it's definitely an upgrade if it's something that you use all the time. I mean, I'm reminded of when the first AirPods came out and we talked to Kyle Weens from iFixit about it. Mm-hmm. And he was like, these have the worst score. So like there's literally nothing you can do. And these work just fine because I don't really use them very often.
There are a lot of people that use them often that say mm-hmm. the battery life has diminished significantly over time.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And then when these do die, like there's nothing. I mean, they just go in a landfill. They can't be reused. They can't be, you can't, the Apple, I think, can't even replace the battery.
Frame it, put it on your wall.
Yeah, exactly. It will go in a museum.
Remember all the wonderful things you listened through those earphones. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I will have a longer review of these at some point.
All right. Look for that. I'm imagining
on Hands on Tech. Subscribe and like.
twit.tv/HOT. And as for twit.tv/TNW, that's this show, Tech News Weekly, we are done. We record live every Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific at twit.tv/live. That's where you can catch the live show. You can also be part of the show by emailing us at tnw@twit.tv.
And subscribe to our show. You can go to twit.tv/TNW for that and follow us on the social media. That's Twitter, Instagram. And if you tweet at me, I'm at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell on Twitter. Thanks to everyone who helps us each and every day. Thanks to Jammer B, who was in here laughing and making us feel funny. Thanks to Burke. Thanks to Alex. Thanks to everyone who helps us each and every week. And thanks to you for watching. We'll see you next week on Tech News Weekly. Bye, everybody.